Blog Talk Radio.
Now, I know that all of us read our newspapers and listen to the news, and we have our own opinions. But for this show, I want you to put your thinking cap on, and I want you to think beyond the rhetoric that you hear in the media. We're going to talk about immigrants in the United States and the contributions that they are making, particularly as entrepreneurs. It's a fascinating story, and we're going to bring it to you. So take out your pens and paper and pencils and get ready to learn. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and I'm broadcasting live from Hibernian Hall here in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Get ready for an exciting show. This is Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and I am so glad that you are with us today and listening to Focus on Empowerment, whether you're listening live or to the download. I think this is going to be a show that you'll want to talk about and dig deep and learn a little bit more about, because for the first half of our show and for much of the first half, we're going to talk about immigration issues, but immigration as it relates to economic development, jobs, and entrepreneurship. I attended an exciting conference yesterday that was put on by the Immigrant Learning Center. They are based in Malden, Massachusetts, but their work is far-reaching and certainly deals with a global perspective on immigration issues. And they had a wonderful conference yesterday, so I'm going to take you through some of the highlights of that conference. I do want you to take your pens and pencils out because we have some statistics and data to share with you. We're probably going to make this a two-part show because there's so much information, and there are some audio clips that I want to play next week on Thanksgiving Day that will also give you insight and real information about the struggles, the opportunities, the issues, and the contributions that the immigrant community is making, has made, and certainly will make going forward. I'm excited because I'm here on the third floor in the conference room of Hibernian Hall, a refurbished hall in Roxbury, Massachusetts. It was an old Irish ballroom dancing space, speaking of immigrants, many years ago. The building was almost abandoned probably 6 or 7 years ago with no one here in the space. And thanks to some real wonderful, dedicated, community-oriented leaders, including Candelaria Silva, who was at that time the executive director of the Madison Park Development Center, along with her efforts and the others who were involved in fundraising for this building. They actually restored the building, and it is simply beautiful. It's a mixed-use space. There are small businesses that are here, probably some immigrant businesses that are here as well. And then on the third floor is their rent-out space, their rental space, including space for a great play that is going to happen this weekend called Sojourner's Truth. And Dylan Buston, who is our marketing director for Madison Park, is going to join me on this show a little bit later on, talking about the play, the building, and what's new in store for Hibernian Hall. So we have a great show in store for you. In fact, the building smells so good because they're planning for a wonderful Thanksgiving Day dinner. One of the resident organizations of Orchard Park, it's a community housing development in the neighborhood, is having their dinner in this building. I've seen all the wonderful gifts that are going to be given away, and the food smells delicious. So my nostrils are going to be in another place, not just focus on this show today, but it's a great space and a wonderful building. And also, one of the merchant bankers is on the second floor of this building. That's Next Street Financial. They are extremely helpful for emerging businesses that are growing from approximately $5 million on up. And at some point in the future, we're probably going to have Ron Walker, the co-founder of Next Street Financial, on the show. He was written up in Time Magazine, the New York Times Magazine, along with his partner in the business, and they occupy the second floor. They have beautiful space on the second floor. So this is a really interesting building and really speaks to sort of beyond the immigrant story, but certainly how buildings can be refurbished and revitalized and used specifically for economic development and cultural awareness and beautification, should I say. So we will talk more with Dylan Buston later on this afternoon once I have a chance to share with you my thoughts and highlights of the wonderful conference yesterday. If you are interested in the Multicultural Symposium Series, which I hope you are, we want you to join, definitely. We are excited about where the Multicultural Symposium Series is going and where it is growing. And we would love for you to consider membership. It's only $99 a year. It includes our yearly conference that was just held on October 28th, also our upcoming events that will take place in 2011, and a number of online activities, including the newsletter and some growing information we're going to have part of our member website area we are getting ready to launch very, very shortly. But it's all there for you as a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. So we encourage you to go to www.msconnect.com, msconnect.com, and peruse the website and find out how you can become a member. We are also launching a $9.95 per month special campaign. So for those where money is really tight, and we certainly understand that, then you just have to worry about a simple $9.95 payment every month to become a full-fledged member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. So please go to the website, www.msfconnect.com, and find out how you can become our very newest member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. It's all there for you. Speaking of multicultural, let's get back and talk about the conference yesterday. I have known the development director, Kathy Smith, at the Immigrant Learning Center for a number of years, and through that connection, she is also a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series, and one thing led to another, and I had the opportunity of meeting the co-founder of that great center, Diane Portnoy, who started this organization probably 20 years ago with a colleague. She is a certified teacher, adult education teacher. Her parents were Holocaust survivors. She arrived here in the United States when she was 3 years old with her parents, so she has her own personal stories to tell. And just watching her parents and watching the community that she grew up in Massachusetts, led her to have a lifelong passion to provide whatever opportunities necessary for new immigrants, no matter what country they come from, to come to the United States, come to the greater Boston area, and learn English. So the Immigrant Learning Center, first and foremost, is a place where new immigrants can come and learn how to speak English. It's so important. We all know how important the English language is in order to conduct business and do transactions. And that center was set up for that particular reason. Now, this is the awesome thing about the center. The center provides its services for free, completely free. And yes, you can imagine they have a very long waiting list for immigrants from all parts of the world who are in the Boston area who want to either learn English or improve their English. They come to the center. The center offers other services as well, but that is the main reason why they're in business, and that is, again, the vision of Diane Portnoy. They occupy three floors in the downtown section of the Malden building. They're getting ready to expand to a fourth floor, adding on a public education department. And it's just really exciting about being in that space and seeing what they're doing. Well, they decided, with Diane's leadership and with her capable staff members who were on board today, including Dr. Marcia Drew Hone, who is the Director of Public Education for the Immigrant Learning Center, they put on their very first Massachusetts statewide conference on immigrant entrepreneurship. And they chose to have this at Babson College. Now, you're probably saying, okay, why do I need to know that? Well, two things. Number one, Massachusetts is in many ways, it's a coastal state, and it is a gateway for thousands of immigrants who come here either directly or come here by way of New York or one of the other ports, set up shop, live here, raise their families, and many of them start businesses. It happens in California. It happens in other coastal states. So that is one very important feature. Number two is that they chose to have the conference at Babson College because Babson College is the number one college in the United States for entrepreneurship. They have a number of entrepreneurial programs on the undergraduate and graduate level, and they have a beautiful conference center that I've now been to twice in the last month in two different conferences. I also went to the AAUW conference. That's a conference for, it used to be called the American Association of University Women. I'm now a member, and their conference was there a few weeks ago. And now I had a chance to go back for the conference on immigrant entrepreneurship. So it makes sense that that conference was held there. There were about 100 people in attendance, academicians, city and state officials, entrepreneurs, curious individuals who wanted to come, but the learning process was really extraordinary. And if I'm looking at their press clippings now, and this is why this topic is so important, and I'll just sort of talk to you about those who were in attendance. Says that some of the key findings about Massachusetts immigrants are immigrants establish 25.7% of biotechnology firms in the Commonwealth that generated 4,000 jobs. Everybody is big on jobs now. We know that the congressional seats, the congressional power has changed from Democratic to Republican in the House of Representatives. It stayed with the Democrats in the Senate. But the number one issue that people are really focusing on right now are jobs, jobs, jobs. Where are the jobs coming from? Where have they gone? And what companies and organizations are going to be in place to establish new jobs so that our economy will continue to be vibrant and thrive? Well, part of that answer has everything to do with immigrants and the immigrants who are here and the immigrants who are going to come. It has everything to do with the students, because a lot of these companies that I've just referenced, these 4,000 new jobs, 25.7% biotech firms in the Commonwealth, a lot of that has to do with the students who were educated, particularly in Massachusetts, stayed on board, got their graduate degrees, got their PhDs, and then have gone on to start these businesses, startups at first and now some very large. A lot of background noise because this is a real busy part of Boston. So even though I'm on the third floor, you can probably hear sirens and lots of activities. So anyway, the students and the residual value of those students who have either graduated or moved on have everything to do with jobs. Similar to young Zuckerman, who started Facebook, who didn't finish Harvard, but he certainly was there and started Facebook as a result of his experience and the collaborations he had on that college campus. So when you look at jobs, you're looking at education, you're looking at the people who are in place, the people who are coming in place, and it all spells economic development for the future for everybody. Also goes on and says $7.6 billion in revenue from these new biotech firms that were started in 2006. And it's interesting the breakout of what the ethnicities are. Who are the people who are starting these businesses? We talked about that yesterday. Asian-owned businesses grew at an astounding 44% in the last economic census. And here we're talking specifically about Massachusetts, but you can go to any state in the United States, any state, and you are going to have the impact of immigrants on your particular population and with your economy. And it goes to show that if you are in one of the mid-lying states in the Midwest, I'm from Michigan originally, there's a vibrant activity going on with immigrants who are now locating and relocating in the state of Michigan. So it doesn't make a difference where you are. There is some impact of the immigrant population that is affecting you and affecting your economy. Also, Asian Americans are mostly immigrants. Who are mostly immigrants? created 18,000 companies, from nail salons to scientific firms, and paid over 37,000 employees with an annual payroll of $1.2 billion. That is astounding. I'm looking at my nails right now, and yes, I do go to a nail shop that is owned by a wonderful Vietnamese woman. Her daughter works in the shop. There are other family members who are there, but there are also employees. So you just have to look at your hands, and you are in some way contributing to this growth pattern if you, in fact, go to a nail shop that is owned by an Asian person, a Vietnamese person in this particular case. I heard an after story last night about, I'm going to actually give you some information from Richard Herman's book, Immigrant Inc. He was one of the keynote speakers yesterday, and he talked about one of the immigrants who now has a wonderful deal with Walmart, and he owns 1,000 nail shops that are inside Walmart's all over the country. So again, these stories are not to be blinked at. They shouldn't be forgotten because they're really important. And these businesses really include leisure and hospitality businesses where immigrants command 33% of ownership in restaurants and hotel accommodations. Yesterday, I actually heard the presentation and then had a chance to talk with him a little later on from Ashish Sangari, who is originally from India, came to this country, he's educated and got a job. He needed to work, and he got a job as a clerk in a hotel. He saw the business implications of it. He saw a future for himself. One thing led to another, and then he was able to negotiate the purchase of his first hotel from Eastern Nazarene College, which is a college in the Quincy area right outside of Boston. Not only did he buy that particular hotel, he leveraged that, and now he owns about 5 or 6 different hotels, Holiday Inns and Comfort Inns, up and down the East Coast from Massachusetts all the way up to Maine. Now, this is a relatively young man and immigrant, but again, one of the success stories that is happening not just in the Boston area, but certainly all over the United States. The conference started off with statistics. The co-founder, Diane Portnoy, gave remarks, opening remarks, followed by the director of public education, who was really the main coordinator and director of the conference, Dr. Marcia Drew Hone, who is an academician, and the research that this organization is doing is amazing. And again, the Immigrant Learning Center is probably one of the few, if not the only, immigrant center, first of all, offering direct services to the immigrant population, but also preparing and identifying and creating statistical research. They have a number of papers that they have published. They have information on the immigrant population as it relates to entrepreneurship. So their uniqueness really is tying in the immigrant population along with the work that they are doing in terms of economic development and entrepreneurship. They opened up with Julio De Castro. He is the Blank Center for Entrepreneurship professor at Babson College, and he talked about the entrepreneurial experience and data and evidence in Massachusetts in particular. And then they had a number of panel discussions. So typically there was a headline speaker, in this case Dr. De Castro, and then there were a number of panel members. Then there was actually an opening speaker, Paul Watanabe, who is the director of the Asian Institute at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. And also, Paul is a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series and a speaker at the October 28th conference that we had. And he is always such an insightful person. He knows the numbers. And the thing about Dr. Watanabe is that he also understands the political implication of the immigration patterns all over the country. He is a member of the research team of the Census Bureau, goes to Washington quite a bit, is quoted quite a notable all over the country, and his parents were interned in Utah during World War II. He is of Japanese descent, and for some of our listeners who don't know, there were internment camps in Utah where property was confiscated by Japanese Americans who lived primarily on the West Coast. They were all moved to Utah in internment camps where they stayed until the end of the war. That is a huge story that we'll probably touch upon and talk on at a later time with our program. But Dr. Watanabe, again, knows firsthand from his parents' perspective and certainly doing all the research, the impact of immigrants in this country. Panels included Allison Maranto, who was with the Jamaica Plain Neighborhood Development Corporation. There are a lot of small nonprofit organizations that are assisting what we call mom-and-pop businesses. They are the lifeblood of all neighborhoods, and typically what happens is you'll have an immigrant family or a person who is a part of an immigrant family. There are a lot of those who are from Latin America and South America here in Massachusetts who come. They do not have a lot of money. They don't necessarily want to work for someone else, in part because their English may be limited, or they just have a very strong tendency and a need to serve and to become an entrepreneur. So they move into neighborhoods, designated neighborhoods, where they may be run down, maybe they need some revitalization. They're typically urban areas. They come in and they buy storefront properties, or they rent space and they operate neighborhood stores. This is happening all over the country. It's not a new phenomenon. It has happened throughout the passage of time. In fact, Marilyn Halter, who is a professor at Boston University in one of the panels, talked about these patterns, immigrant patterns that have happened throughout generations. Europeans back in the 1800s, the Irish obviously during that time as well, and then now you are looking at demographic shifts when you're talking about the Asians, those who are from Latin and South America, and those who are from Africa as well, who are coming in and purchasing these stores, revitalizing the communities, and in many cases hiring people. There was a speaker in the afternoon speaking of that, and sometimes people will say, well, they only hire their relatives. They only bring their relatives in. They do bring their relatives in, but they also hire people in the community and others, and they give them a job opportunity. We heard in the afternoon yesterday from Ann O'Callaghan, who is part of the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians. So we brought her in from Pennsylvania. The conference brought her in from Pennsylvania. And she gave an interesting statistic. She said she hears it all the time. She actually is an immigrant from Ireland originally. And she said she hears people say, well, they only hire their relatives. So how can you talk about economic development when immigrants don't hire outside of their family? They commissioned a small study within her organization, looked at 200 businesses in a designated urban area in Pennsylvania, and out of those 200 businesses, extracting the family members who were working there, not even counting them, they came up with 900 jobs, 900 people who were being employed by these 200 businesses in that respective region. So that's just one small example of the kind of entrepreneurship that is leading to jobs. When I look at Ashish, who has these four or five hotels between Massachusetts and Maine, the name of his company is Geary Hotels. I know that probably his relatives are definitely involved in the hotels, but you have to have staff members to run a hotel. You've got to have housekeeping. You've got to have maintenance. You have to have people running your restaurants. So clearly he has a payroll to meet every week as a result of that. The point is, immigrants, and this is something that I have had to reckon with. I've had to think about and realize how important it is. And again, this is going to be a theme of mine, just the importance of immigrants to multiculturalism, global diversity, gateway to the world, and the significance that they bring to any society. I look at the fact that many immigrants, because of the opportunities they don't have in their respective country, they come to America with all of our preconceived notions, the myth of America, the American dream, whatever the story you can think about. They come here, but they also come here with their own dreams, and they come here to be productive citizens in this country. That's how most, 98% of immigrants who come to the United States come here for to make a better life for themselves and their family. They work hard, they start their own businesses, they buy up or they rent property in areas that may or may not need refurbishing. Many times they do need refurbishing. They work long hours, and they do that, and they contribute to the society and to our culture, and they also help their family members out. Long Nguyen, who is with Viet Aid, that's a Vietnamese organization, a nonprofit organization here again in the Dorchester area, I thought was fascinating. He talked about the number of nail shops, the number of businesses that he is counseling and servicing. He's actually an attorney. He gave a funny story about one of his business clients. Who I don't even think has a high school diploma, yet is very successful and took him out to lunch. He's a lawyer. But he talked about how, again, working 7 days a week in some cases, working 18 hours a day in some cases, mothers and fathers and getting the children involved after school. With these parents, the number one goal is to better their lives and to provide the money and the income so that their children will, A, become educated, and, B, will be gainfully and productively responsible citizens in the United States. I found it interesting that Long Nguyen said yesterday that in many cases, these business owners working with restaurants, working with cleaners, nail shops, refinishing, the two businesses that are the biggest in the Asian or certainly the Vietnamese community in Massachusetts are the nail business and also refinishing. They refinish floors. They sand down floors and a lot of hardwood floors, and they are very big in that business. But he says a lot of them don't want their kids to go into the business. They want their kids to do something else. They want their kids to have somewhat of an easier life. And that's not any different than any other immigrant group who's come to the shores. He also talked about neighborhoods in the Dorchester area that have appreciated in value, where many of the immigrants who have been responsible for the upkeep, the maintenance, refinishing the floors and stuff, clearly they're paid for their services, but don't necessarily benefit from the appreciation of the property. And that's something that his organization is beginning to look at, where there can be more of an equitable way of having economic development sort of trickle down more with those Asian businesses and groups and families who are contributing to that case. Dr. Marcia Hone, who is with the Immigrant Learning Center, said that the immigrant entrepreneurship is an old story in America, but a changing one. She said, as we move into a new world of global business, these entrepreneurs provide crucial models, connections, and cultural know-how for doing business internationally. They create a new pathway for conducting business in the global marketplace that will bring critical wealth creation and jobs to Massachusetts and the country. Case in point, I shift gears and talk about Richard Herman, who was one of the closing speakers at yesterday's event. And also, I should give a big shout-out to the post-luncheon speaker, Dr. Jan Vilcek, who was extraordinary. He's professor at New York University of Medicine, and he's the co-developer of a breakthrough drug for treating inflammatory disorders, and he's president of the Vilcek Foundation. He co-founded this drug. He's made an enormous amount of money, but he's donated it to the university, to New York University, and set up his own foundation as a result of it. He is an immigrant, so he told his story, certainly told the story where he has worked not as an entrepreneur, but certainly as a researcher, but how, again, his work has just led to treatment and relief from pain and affliction as a result of the drug that he was responsible for. But let me just talk about Richard Herman, who wrote Immigrant, Inc. And this is a brand new book. I have a copy of it right here. And the subtitle is Why Immigrant Entrepreneurs Are Driving the New Economy. Richard Herman, he was a delightful speaker yesterday. He's married to a woman from, he's white, and he's married, he's an immigration attorney, married to a woman originally from Taiwan, so he understands the experience firsthand. But he talked about how, and this is the basis for his book, he talked about how immigrants, because of their ingenuity, their creativity, the drive that they have to work, the sacrifices that they are willing to make, can come into an area like the Midwest. He's from Cleveland, Ohio, and he does work in Michigan and other places too. And literally with their new businesses, and particularly as those businesses grow, can become economic revitalization engines for the Rust Belt. He talked about someone who has started a business, a lithium battery business in Livonia, Michigan. I'm from Detroit, so Livonia is a suburb outside of Detroit. And that business is taking off, and he is hiring people and their jobs there. So the point of the book is looking at these very successful entrepreneurs across the country and seeing how they are contributing to our society and our economic fabric of our society, but also the opportunities that are in place and can happen, certainly, going forward. It's just an extraordinary book, and I would encourage you to get it. We have video clips. We'll play audio clips. This is a radio show. Audio clips that we're going to play next week from Richard Herman, and you'll have a chance to hear him and just hear the ideas and suggestions that he has. It's quite amazing. The conference continued on, and again, we had a number of speakers that spoke throughout the day. We had a wonderful dinner that took place as well. Again, there was Yumin Choi, who is originally from Korea. He is with the Capital Network, so they talked about venture capital, angel funding, and the importance of it. So they talked about the financial implications of businesses along with other aspects of it. The point is, this is a market. This is an area that we need to focus on, turning the dial down on so much of the rhetoric that we hear on television and elsewhere. There are a lot of very good success stories going on, whether you're talking about a husband and a wife, or a wife who has started a business by herself, or whether you're talking about a family business that leverages itself and creates new opportunities for 100 people. We're talking about the success stories and the factors of what it's taking to change our attitude so that we can look at immigrants as assets in the United States, not liabilities, but assets in the United States. How can we do that in such a way where we can embrace our immigrants, learn about their culture and their customs, and use that knowledge so that we can have an ongoing dialogue, a continuous dialogue about the future of our country as it relates to economic development and jobs and jobs and jobs. I mentioned earlier about students, and one of the panelist yesterday was quite amazing. Let me see if I can go to his information. Just a very amazing person. He gave a very innovative speech, too. He was a student, a college student, a graduate student. He has a very successful business. His name is Dr. Srinhar Iyengar. He is a second-generation Indian. He has a business partner who is Vietnamese, and they were college buddies. This young man, he's still a very young man, saw the importance of the healthcare industry and wanted to make a difference with healthcare and realized that there are a lot of people in this country, in my family also, who have diabetes, and they have to check their sugar every day, or they have to check it regularly, depending on the level of diabetes that they have. So he has created, and he makes glucose strips. Now you say, okay, so what? His story was fascinating. He had a lot of humor in it. He talked about when he first started his business in his one-bedroom apartment. And he and his colleague, his business associate, Sunny Vu, who again is of Vietnamese descent, he's first-generation Vietnamese, moved into his one-bedroom apartment. And the response that his landlord had when he said, you know, I have a partner who wants to move in my apartment, and the landlord probably thought that they were a gay couple. He didn't ask any questions, but anyway, Sunny Vu moved in. They're not a gay couple. They're business. They have a business relationship. He moved in. He set up a partition in this one-bedroom place and set up his own bedroom area. And literally, they grew their business from a one-bedroom apartment. Now, there are lots of stories like that, but this one I thought was just quite interesting. And so he talked about the lab space that he would need. And here he's in the Boston area, so he thought that he could go to one of the teaching universities here in the area or go to one of the labs. Genzyme is here. We've got MIT, Harvard, et cetera. And they said, yeah, you can have space here, but you will in some cases have to pay us like $30,000, or whatever research you do here, we are going to keep the rights. We will own the rights of all the research that you do. Well, again, the wonderful thing, the beautiful thing about immigrants is that they have connections back home, or they have connections, or they come to the United States and they align themselves with other immigrants from other countries. So then, and they go to school, whether it's in Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Texas, Arkansas, Idaho, Wyoming, or California, and they meet people from other countries and they form lifelong lasting friendships. So, and this is what Dr. Srinhar actually did. He actually said you need to have fun. You need to learn how to have fun, which he seems to do wonderfully so. And so instead of paying out a whole lot of money and giving up the rights to all his research for these glucose strips, he had friends in Australia. And he had a contact in Australia and found out it was cheaper to do research in Australia than to do research in Massachusetts. Go figure. That's a discussion in and of itself. He also found that he needed, obviously, these kind of companies, you need money, you need an awful lot of money. And the person pitched lots of companies here, venture capital companies in the United States, but then found that his source was in Monaco, and he animated how it was cheaper to go to Monaco for a week than to go for a day or so. So he ended up going there for a week, save money. He's all about saving money. And as a result of that dedication, he actually picked up their first funder from Monaco. They did their lab work in Sydney, Australia. They have now, they're building a manufacturing plant in China because of contacts, And so now they have a multi-million dollar business with 100 employees in different countries doing the work of creating these glucose strips. Now, the glucose strips are not under his company's name. The name of his company is Agba Matrix. That's the name of that particular company. But it is sold in Target stores. It is sold under the name of other retail operations and drugstores and healthcare organizations around the United States. Just an amazing story. But he's still growing. They have 100 employees. So, again, we're looking at an immigrant's desire and goal, two of them, and how they stayed small, they grew, they kept their expenses down, they did things with a lot of innovation. One thing led to another from a one-bedroom apartment. And now we are talking about a large company, multi-million dollar company, that is making a significant difference. Also, this company has its first ever iPhone application in the field of glucose intervention. So you can probably Google it and find out more about it. You can just go to Agva, AGAMATRIX, and find out about that iPhone application. So not only are they doing well and hiring a lot of people, they are also providing technology too. So it's just fascinating, absolutely fascinating what is taking place. There were lots of stories like that throughout the day. And so what I want to do next week is to play some of the clips, and we'll have some more statistical information. A lot of this information I'm going to have on my website as well, because the immigrant story is now our story. It is a story of economic survivalship, from mom and pop businesses to businesses now that have 100 employees. There was a one speaker who was originally from Russia yesterday who spoke, Dr. Anna Voronovo, who is a life science consultant. She has a PhD in the life science, the biotech field, and she has a lot of experience. But she closed it out. She said, I have lived in other countries. Obviously, she's from Russia. She also lived in Paris. She's lived elsewhere. But she said, I always come back to the United States because that's where the immigrants ultimately can be embraced and where opportunities are limitless in terms of what they can do. The opportunities are limitless. It's a matter of, can we embrace immigrants? Can we get on board? Can we get beyond the rhetoric? Can we do it in a way that is fulfilling? And can we do it in a way where the roles and responsibilities of immigrants in the United States will directly lead to economic development, job creation, business development throughout the United States? My answer is yes. I think it's going to happen. But it's going to take many people moving beyond their fear and apprehension, moving beyond some of the things that are not very useful in terms of perceptions of people, but looking at it from, what can I do? How can I get on board? Most importantly, how can I learn from people who have an experience that's quite different from mine? They've come up from a different walk of life. They've come from a different country. Their culture is different. Their background is different. But we're all here now, and how can my experience be more valuable? How can I share my resources, my background with these individuals, and how can I learn from them going forward? It's a wonderful opportunity for us to do this. In Boston, in closing, again, we'll pick up on this next week, I go to a place in the Mattapan area of Boston because they have really good chicken. I just love their chicken. So I go there now every Sunday. I know it puts pounds on me, but it's really good. But as a result of that, I've gotten to know the gentleman who probably is one of the part owners. It's a Pakistani business. And when the Pakistani floods took place a couple of weeks ago, months ago now, again, the resettlement issues are just enormous. There are a lot of people, millions of people who are still out of their homes, and they're going to have to rebuild their bridges that are still down. I had a chance to go in there and learn more about his village. I learned more about his family members, the fact that, thank goodness, no one was lost in the flooding that took place, but that there is a lot of disruption. And just to get to know him more so, those are the kind of one-on-one teachable moments that I want you to have. I want you to go in and learn about the homeland of the people whose businesses you go into and you spend money in. Learn about where they're from when there's a news story that takes place. Learn more about them. We have horrific cholera epidemic that's taking place in Haiti right now. Well, chances are there's a Haitian business owner, there's a family in your neighborhood where you can learn more about their homeland, see how you can obviously help out in that situation. But the learning process can grow, can help expand you, and you'd be surprised at how your attitude will change and grow and emerge as a result of understanding the importance of business development and entrepreneurship in the immigrant community. So we'll continue this next week. We'll have these audio clips that we'll play for you, and we're going to intersperse this going forward because this is very much a part of empowerment. It is very much a part of entrepreneurship, and it is very much a part of where our country is going to grow and go going forward. So we are going to play a little break music now and then talk to our guest who is here about Hibernian Hall and all the exciting things that are taking place. So stay tuned for just a little minute, and then we will be back. Well, I'm excited. I'm joined here now by Mr. Dylan Buston, and he is the Director of Marketing for the Madison Park Development Corporation. They are the owner of Hibernian Hall, and just a fascinating organization, a lot of activities going on in this building today. And Dylan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm glad that you're here. Tell us a little bit about this building and about Madison Park Corporation.
This building is at 184 Dudley Street, and it was built in 1913-1914. It was built by a fraternal organization of Irish immigrants, speaking of immigration. I think it's called the Ancient Royal Order of Hibernia. So there were many, many Hibernian halls up and down the East Coast, and they were a self-help organization, a benevolent society, and a social fraternity. So in those days, the activity was organized by county. You'd have events for people from Cork, from Kerry, from Galway.
From Ireland. Right.
They didn't think of themselves as from Ireland. They would think of themselves as from County Cork or County Kerry. And so they only socialized. And if one should, a young person from Galway should marry somebody from Cork.
God forbid.
It was a mixed marriage.
Wow.
Anyway, this was a place that had many meeting rooms. It had a billiard parlor. It had a bowling alley in the basement. But the main attraction was a ballroom on the third floor. At that time, there were 5 Irish dance halls in Dudley Square. And this is the only one still standing.
Wow.
It was acquired by Madison Park Development Corporation in 2001, and they took 4 or 5 years to restore it. It cost about $7 million. It opened to the public in 2005. Madison Park Development Corporation has its offices on the first floor. There are other tenants in the building. But the ballroom is now run as the Roxbury Center for Art at Hibernian Hall.
Well, I think it's really fitting here. I've been talking for the last 40 minutes about immigrants' contributions. And when we, again, go back, you look at the patterns of immigrants and what they did for their respective families and their groups through the years. And here we have the last surviving Irish ballroom building that now is transformed into a wonderful mixed-use space.
And, you know, I found some records. Minutes and bank statements and so on, and there's records of conversations they had here in the 50s and 60s as the neighborhood was changing over to Jewish immigrants, and they were not making as much income from their Irish events, and it was suggested we've got to start doing more of our mitzvahs.
Wow.
We've got to start hosting more Jewish events.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you, you look at the groups who have been in this area. So I'm interested because of all the cultural events that have happened in this building, in this space, and what now is going to happen this weekend with this delightful play, Sojourner's Truth. Tell us about that.
Sojourner's Truth is a new play. It was developed by Enchanted Circle Theater, which is a nonprofit organization in Holyoke. It had its first run last spring in Northampton. I saw it at the Northampton Music Hall in May, and it did tour to some schools out there last spring semester. So this fall, they're traveling more widely with it. And I jumped on it and was the first to invite them to Boston. So this will be their Boston premiere. Tomorrow, Friday, November the 19th, we'll have a program at 10 in the morning, at 4 in the afternoon, and then on Saturday the 20th at 8 o'clock in the evening, and Sunday the 21st at 2 in the afternoon.
Right. I'm excited because I will go to the Saturday performance, and I'm just looking forward to it. I know that there are tickets available, so give our listening audience ways where they can get tickets for the weekend.
Well, the easiest is to go to our website, and that's www.madison-park.org, and you can see on the home page there a link to Sojourner's Truth, and there's an opportunity to purchase tickets right there online.
I know that we probably have some listeners who don't know who Sojourner Truth was, so tell us who she was in the course of abolitionist history and African-American history, Dylan.
Well, you know, a lot of people have heard about Harriet Tubman. And a lot of people have heard about Sojourner's Truth, but I think they sometimes get them somewhat combined into one person.
And they're very different women, too.
They're very different.
Yeah.
Harriet Tubman was from the South, and she was active in the Underground Railroad and so on. Sojourner Truth was born into slavery, but she was born in upstate New York. And so she was one of the last lingering slaves in the North and achieved her freedom during her lifetime. She moved to the Northampton area. She actually joined a commune, if you can believe it or not,
wow,
a utopian commune in the town of Florence, and gradually began to speak out more and more about her own life story and her own perceptions, not only on race relations, but also on the status of women in society.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a pacifist, and she became a general commentator on society and a critic of the government, and she wrote her autobiography, and she became probably the most outspoken and one of the most popular public speakers of the early 19th century, and she was active right up through the period of the war, and then after the war, she focused more on women's rights.
I'm talking about the Civil War here.
Yes, I am.
Yes. I mean, she has many speeches, and you know, some of the quotes that I can remember, "Ain't I a Woman?" and "Life Didn't Hand Me No Crystal Staircase." And, I mean, she was a large woman who had struggled. I mean, she saw her children sold off into slavery. So she had seen the worst that any mother can have. She had experienced the worst that any mother can have, having children born to you and then having them ripped from you because of the institution of slavery. So I'm looking forward to this play. Tell us about some of the actresses here.
Well, the woman portraying Sojourner Truth is Ramona Lisa Alexander, who's a very well-known actress in the Boston area. She just finished a run at Central Square Theater in Eugene O'Neill's Moon for the Misbegotten.
Mm.
She was here at Hibernian Hall last spring in March playing the grandmother figure in Harriet Jacobs, that play on African-American history. And so we're so pleased and thankful and grateful to have her back. She played on stage against an actress named Melissa Penley, who portrays four different characters.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's an 18-year-old guitarist and singer on stage the whole time, who's a contemporary figure, something of a narrator or a commentator.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Stephanie Maryshow. And she sings a lot of 19th century African-American music interwoven with the vignette. There are also projections of historical photographs and so on.
Oh, so it's like multimedia almost.
That's right,
it is.
That's
wonderful. Well, so Janet Truth, again, we encourage you to call in and get your tickets. Tickets are available. Give us the contact information again.
Well, aside from the website, www.madison-park.org, they can call my desk and leave a message, 617-849-6322, and there will be tickets available at the door, 184 Dudley Street.
Great, wonderful. What brings you to this space? What brings you to the world of nonprofits, community development, cultural awareness? Dylan Buston, how did you come to have this position?
I have always worked in the field of nonprofit arts and humanities. And I grew up in Indiana. I finished high school here near Boston, went back to Indiana University for college. Then I was hired by the State Arts Agency in 1985 and moved out here permanently to the Boston area. I worked in the Community Arts and Education Department of the former agency, which was the Massachusetts Council on the Arts and Humanities, before it morphed into the Massachusetts Cultural Council. So I worked in that department with people like Claire Shaw and Paula Elliott and Lynn Cadwallader and several others who still hang together as a kind of a collegial network and have always remained in that nonprofit community development type field of endeavor. Part of my career, I've been self-employed, and part of my career, I've been an arts administrator. I have worked at regional arts centers before, and I've always had a strong interest and experience in multiculturalism, and I think that somehow that all set me up for this present job.
Great. And you know, we're talking about economic development. I've just talked about the conference that took place yesterday and job development. What do you see on the horizon for organizations like Madison Park and others across the country with shrinking dollars and funding sources that are having to reevaluate how they're going to allocate money? What do you think is on the horizon for organizations like yours?
Well, of course, I'm in an entire agency of people who are specialists in real estate and finance. And I am not. I'm the one arts guy here. So my opinions are not informed opinions and in a professional way. It's more of my own perception on things. I think that when there's a serious recession, the whole nonprofit sector comes out of that trough after everybody else. And if we've had three tough years, I think we're expecting that 2011 will be the toughest yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be when the credit market and the grant agencies sort of bottom out and start to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
So the coming year is going to be very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Madison Park does have some housing development on the drawing board
mm-hmm.
that they hope to break ground on by the end of the year. But right now they're just focusing on finishing up their latest project, which is called 20 at Luma, mm-hmm. 20 townhouses down Dudley Street towards up this corner.
Mm-hmm.
But nonprofits have trouble raising financing like everybody else in the market like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I had Barry Gaither on last week and talked about his museum, and interestingly, he too looked forward and talked about developing real estate development as being a mix so that they will be able to have a income stream going forward. That
mm-hmm.
seems to be the magic formula I'm hearing.
It's the magic formula in terms of theory.
Mm-hmm.
But like a lot of things, the federal programs lag behind.
Uh-huh.
My understanding is that what money is available for low-income housing,
mm-hmm.
not mixed-use development so much. You have to rely on private financing more for that.
Ah, therein lies the interesting... Well, this has been a wonderful capturing of what's taking place here at the Hibernian Hall. The history I find fascinating. I know that this organization will survive and go forward. It will. I know that these plays are going to spell out going forward because people need to have this. You know, obviously, we
forward to the play, and I know that we want others to come, and it's going to be a wonderful experience.
Carol, I thank you for the opportunity to being on your program.
Great. Thank you so much. Dylan Buston, who is the Director of Marketing for the Madison Park Community Development Organization. They own this building, Hibernian Hall, very festive place, and we know that you will hopefully come to this area and check out the play and check out all the other things that they're doing. Have a wonderful week. We'll be back on Thanksgiving Day talking about empowerment issues, immigration issues as well. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon.